Braves and baseball fans, it's time to take a trip from coast to coast across Major League Baseball.
There it goes, a long drive. If it stays fair, home run.
One strike away. Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch. Swung on and missed, a perfect game.
Fly ball deep left center. Grissom on the run. Yes! 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 The Atlanta Braves have given you a championship. Listen to this crowd.
Left side, Swanson to first. Braves, world champions.
Braves and baseball talk, straight from the diamond.
Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today. And Window Nation. Call the pros at Window Nation at 866-90-NATION.
Here's Grant McCauley.
Hello and welcome to From the Diamond. I am Grant McCauley. These are the Kia Studios of Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And we are off and running in the 2025 season, though I will stipulate it doesn't feel like much of a running start for the Atlanta Braves, who have gone out west for, I think, what we knew was going to be a challenging road trip when you looked at who they're playing, the club that ended their season a year ago in the wild card round. And I don't know if you've heard about this team from Los Angeles. They play in Chavez Ravine. They may sign every notable free agent for the rest of time, is the way it feels like. But yeah, the Dodgers are right around the corner. So if you weren't feeling great about this first four-game series against the San Diego Padres, I don't know if I'm going to be able to up your enthusiasm or intensity level for the three games against the LA Dodgers that start out on Monday. But I put all that aside, and I will say the Braves have got to figure out a way to turn some things around, bring home a couple of wins from that road trip, and start to find their footing, if you will. And we're going to be talking a lot about that, obviously, on this show, as the opening day for the Braves was a frustrating loss, and two more have followed since then. And what exactly is going on with these bats, I think, is one of the big questions we have to ask ourselves. And how is this bullpen going to be comprised? Thought maybe opening day was a forebearer of things to come. If you did, well, maybe. Maybe not. We'll see if that group's able to stabilize. We'll talk a lot about that and perhaps who could help out in that mix as well. And then I think we got to talk a little bit about the overall picture for this starting rotation, which over the weekend, Chris Sale, Reynaldo Lopez, they were able to grind it out. Spencer Schwellenbach looked fantastic. And another Spencer was back on the mound for AAA Gwinnett. That's Spencer Strider, who looked pretty good there. We'll talk about when to expect him back in this Atlanta rotation. So an awful lot to get to on this edition of the show. As always, before we get started, I want to remind you to follow along on social media. You can find me at Grant McCauley on most platforms. You can like the show on Facebook and find links to everything over at FromTheDiamond.com. And I want to remind you to subscribe to From the Diamond wherever you get your podcast. And I would love it if you left me a review, and 5 stars would be wonderful as well. Thumbs up, likes, shares, all that stuff is appreciated. Helps the show out immensely. And of course, you can find me and all the good stuff we're doing right here on 92.9 The Game on the Odyssey app. So lots and lots and lots ahead of us this season, and hopefully it's going to be better than what we saw here in the first 3 days in San Diego. Mapping out this season and the way it was started, you knew 7 games out west was going to be a challenge. I don't know that any other club in baseball, and I've looked across most of the rest of the opening schedules, did anybody have it quite as challenging as the Braves. But I think you also have to look at it a number of different ways, and I think that the team looked at it as, let's go ahead out there and get this trip out of the way, get a couple of these tough matchups out of the way, and see really how we can start our season and not have to worry about that later. Not that you spend a lot of time looking at the schedule and checking every box where you're going to worry about this series or that series or the other series, but I can speak, I believe, for the fan base, because I've been watching Braves baseball since the middle of the 1980s, when going out west and dropping a few games and not looking good on the road was not a big surprise. It was not uncommon, if you will, but with the amount of winning that the Braves have done really over the last 30-something years now, which is an insane thing to say when you think about the first 25 or so years of the team's history here in Atlanta, your expectations are a lot higher. And the Braves' expectations, there's just no way around it every year. And I was down in spring training. You heard my spring training specials the last couple of Mondays. Got to talk to a lot of different Braves and kind of size up expectation levels, optimism for 2025, and whether or not you want to say what we were saying this time a year ago, it's World Series or bust. Every single year for this club is going to fall under that banner. Whether you want to, again, print it on T-shirts and mugs and tweet it every single day, or if you just want to put it in the back of your mind and say, hey, that's our goal. That's what we're going for. It sounded like a little bit more of the latter this time around, but health was going to be a big story for this club. That remains, I think, in limbo a little bit because you're still waiting on Ronald Acuna Jr. You're waiting on Spencer Strider, who started his rehab assignment with AAA Gwinnett. with three innings of one-run ball on Saturday. That's another good sign for him. We'll talk a lot more about that later in the show. But, yeah, you want to get those guys back. But I would look at this first three games, and with one bad inning in the opening game notwithstanding, I can't really point at the pitching staff and say, well, this is the problem. But I can, much like we could in the last three Octobers, look at the offense and wonder, all right, when are we going to get these clutch hits? Because that has been a big issue for this team, and you'll hear quite a bit about it on this show, and I'm sure you heard quite a bit about it on the broadcast and on social media, if you're brave enough to go out there, and I am. But the early feedback for this season, overwhelmingly concerned at the very least, and beyond that, there is a little bit of a Chicken Little effect that is going on, but you kind of understand it when you watch them and you think, all these opportunities, and nobody can get a hit. In some cases, nobody can just put the ball in play to bring home a run. I mean, you'll take productive outs where you can get them as well, but that's just not happening. And that, I think, was the difference in what San Diego did, particularly in their four-run seventh inning on opening day that the Braves haven't done in this entire series. And that is get on base, maybe take an extra base, double steal, a couple of sacrifice flies. I mean, you help clubs out, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. And I think for the Braves, it was just one of those things where the little things just were not going their way. The big things obviously aren't. You look at the hit column, you look at the run column, those things aren't happening. But even some of the little things that could begin to maybe pile a little bit more pressure on this Padres bullpen, which I think has been the MVP of the series, if we're being honest. Because the Padres starting pitching, save what Vasquez was able to do in Game 3, I mean, you were able to knock Michael King out, which is no small feat. We saw him in the postseason. He was a monster against the Braves. And obviously Dylan Cease is one of the better right-handers in the National League. You're able to knock him out early, but then not able to capitalize and get those add-on runs. That was an issue for this club. 1-for-22 with runners in scoring position in three games with 23 men left on base. You want to find a quick way to lose three games? Turn in numbers like that. And obviously nobody's trying for that, but it kind of brings back that larger picture that we saw a year ago, which was, you know, the injuries mounted, the inconsistency was there, and maybe it felt like everybody had the mindset of, I've got to be the one to turn it around, and, you know, you get a little bit over-aggressive. You start thinking a little bit too much, which, you know, in sports, I guess a lot of people will say, oh, well, you started thinking and that's your problem. But you have to have a plan and you have to execute that plan. You have to have a certain approach. And I think the Braves have been working throughout the spring with their new hitting coach, Tim Hyers, on trying to incorporate that and have that new voice, that new message that maybe brings them a little bit back to center. Now, you want to have that even keel approach. I know that's so boring and that's so cliche. And it's so baseball. You know, that guy's so even keel. He doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. He just keeps it right here in the center. Another other way Brian Snitker says it is, oh, the guy's got no pulse. So he doesn't get worked up in big situations. But at the plate, you can kind of feel it start to mount throughout. Just bigger situations as the game wears on, you know, late and close. I don't know about you, but I kind of start looking at it, all right, they're down by X amount of runs, and they've got X amount of outs, you know. Is that math working out? And that's hardly scientific. But you just start to think, you know, is this lineup going to get back to the part where you've got the Austin Rileys and the Matt Olsons and the Marcelo Zunas coming up with guys on base? And I think that Saturday was particularly crushing because baseball was the absolute game of inches for the Braves in the loss on Saturday. You have a double that deflected off the pitcher into a camera well. And the Padres ultimately able to score their one run, the only run of the ball game, and beat Spencer Schwellenbach and the Braves. Of course, Spencer not on the hook for that particular run. That was Aaron Bummer, who I don't know if there is an unluckier pitcher in Braves baseball. I'm sure I could find one. I'm sure I could dig one up. But as far as the recent candidates for that, Aaron Bummer's been about as unlucky as it gets. And that one, you could just tell the frustration was there because, you know, you're trying to be perfect. And trying to be perfect is another one of those things that I don't think that serves a club particularly well. Because, listen, none of us are. You can make all the plans that you want before the season and how you want certain games to go, but it's not played on paper. You got to get out there and deal with what is thrown at you. And for the Braves, I think what's been thrown at them is a lot of frustration, a lot of adversity, especially in big situations, run-scoring situations. And I don't know that I have the answer. I've got 2 hours here on the radio every Sunday, but I do not have the answers for what is going to fix this for the Atlanta Braves, but I think it's going to take a continued, diligent approach. And usually over the course of the marathon that is 162-game baseball season, that is what it takes to turn these kinds of things around. But a new season right here, if you're feeling eerily familiar like last year, the offense simply not getting it done, and it's been a rough start with runners in scoring position, and that was one of the hallmarks of 2024. And, you know, is this fun? Absolutely not. I think we're counting down to opening day. We were looking forward to getting baseball back, but we've learned in the long history of baseball, it's not necessarily how you start, it's how you finish. And I could hearken you back to 2021, but I was thinking a lot about this on my drive in. In 2021, the Braves won the World Series. I think we all know that. There's still flags and banners and T-shirts. You can see them around town all the time. It was a really good feeling. Like to do that again. But putting that aside, when the Braves started 0-4 that year, and they ultimately won the World Series. And I don't know how many clubs in the history of baseball went on a losing streak or lost their first series or whatever the case may be, and then went on to win it all. I think, honestly, research like that is probably anecdotal. There's not a lot to it. But I get a lot of conversation, a lot of comments, a lot of feedback, a lot of posts. Some of it good, some of it bad, some of it downright weird. But you look at that 2021 season, and you just couldn't have predicted that. You didn't know any of that was going to happen, and anybody who pretends they did, I think, is kidding themselves. But now you spend all this time constructing this roster and making these moves and creating the best team that you possibly can, and you have trouble in October trying to put everything together. And I guess I say all that to say is you just don't know what's going to happen until you get there. And there is no one right way or one way to do it, and there is no guarantee of success. And as they say in a lot of different things in life, past performance is not a guarantee of future success either. So, you know, the Braves are just in one of those positions where they've got to figure it out, get hot at the right time, and obviously the right time is waiting a little while now because October is not close at the moment. So the question, I think, is, you know, how is this happening? A lineup with several names back in the saddle was supposed to look a lot better. They added Jurickson Profar. They'll get Ronald Acuña Jr. back in a few weeks, and it's just very much early. But one hit with runners in scoring position, you're not going to win very many games that way. So the Braves have got to figure some of these things out. Coming up on this edition of From the Diamond, I'm going to break down what's been going on with the Braves out west, of course, and it's not all doom and gloom. There are some things we can talk about that might have us ahead for a more than decent season. Let's just put it that way. I'll have CJ Nitkowski of FanDuel Sports Network join me to discuss that, and I'll hit some stories from across Major League Baseball with Scott Braun of Foul Territory. So I hope you will ride along with me for the next hour and 45 minutes here. When we come back, we'll get into this week in Braves baseball as we continue on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Now, more From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer from Mark Spain Real Estate. 855-299-SOLD on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in to From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. Right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Talking a little bit about what's been going on with the Atlanta Braves, who have had, I would say, about as bad a start to their season as possible here. Braves went out west, kind of fell flat on their face, to put it lightly, or maybe to oversimplify it. I think if you've been watching the last 3 days, you're probably feeling some kind of way about it. The Padres, though, have simply played better, and as I talked about when we opened up the show, they've just done the little things that it takes to win games, whether that's on the bases, whether that is coming through at the plate, whether that is making the play in the field that needs to be made at a given time. The Padres have seemingly done just about every little thing that they need to do. Meanwhile, it feels like the Braves either can't do little things they need to do or they can't get out of their own way at times as well. So even with their top two starters not very sharp, the Padres have taken the first three games of the series. They've got the clutch hits, running the base as well. The bullpen has also been stellar. I think that has been the real difference maker for the Padres, or what could be a real difference maker for that club this year. And we'll see if it's able to perform at a high level, even though they didn't bring back Tanner Scott. Speaking of Tanner Scott, you know, the Dodgers are up next, and the rich got richer over the course of the winter, signing him away from not only the Padres, but the Braves were in hot pursuit of Tanner Scott as well. So, you know, you add it all up, the Padres have just been the better team over the first 3 days, but I don't think you want to be in the first series thinking about cap tipping time, because it's way too early for that kind of thing. And the Braves, honestly, as much as I know that they value the ability to stay on that even keel and take that one day at a time approach, you just want to see maybe, I don't know, a little bit more of that passion, if you will. And maybe that's hearkening back to some of the attitude, the swagger, all of the things that the intangible stuff that even if it doesn't have a quantifiable, you know, measure of success, it just feels better. It just looks better. It's just more fun to watch. And you're just not seeing as much of that. I think that some of that could change when you get Ronald Acuña Jr. back, obviously. He's an energy that I don't think any other player on the Atlanta Braves club has. But that's not happening this weekend. It's not happening next week. I mean, he's not walking through that door, as the saying goes, immediately. You're going to see what he can do once he gets back. But the group that's here, I think, should have the ability to do a lot more than it's done over the first three games, certainly. And we'll see once they're kind of able to get 10 games, 15 games more under their belts. We've seen the course of a long season where you have these high spots and low spots, but when you've got nothing but a sample size like the Braves have right now of futility, frustration, and losses, yeah, you're not going to feel any differently until you start seeing different results, that's for sure. Atlanta didn't get a big deal done for a reliever over the winter. I know I mentioned again that they tried for Tanner Scott. They kicked the tires on some other guys and ultimately couldn't get that done, but they knew Joe Jimenez was very likely going to miss all or most of the season, and A.J. Minter left and signed with the New York Mets, but no major moves followed. Now, I chatted with Alex Anthopoulos. You heard that interview on From the Diamond just this past Monday, and you can find it in the archives as well, just about what this winter was for the Braves. They signed Jurickson Profar, and then I would say they just went out and took a lot of flyers on a lot of players. And they were doing that all the way up until the final week of spring training, where they signed a rather notable name in Craig Kimbrell, who you would think, well, that's got to be more than a flyer, right? And I believe that it is. But he was out of work all the way until the end of spring training as well, and had kind of an up-and-down season last year. And I don't want to jump ahead, but there are going to be some reinforcements, if you will, that walk through that door. Hopefully Craig Kimbrell is one of those to help out in this bullpen mix. But it was quizzical, and I can certainly understand the frustration of, you've got Chris Sale out there grinding for five innings. You go to Dylan Lee. He tosses a scoreless sixth inning on nine pitches. And all of a sudden, in a one-run game, you got Hector Neris. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that on an eight-man pitching staff that Hector Neris doesn't have a role and can't be a contributor in some way, shape, or form. He's in his 12th season in the big leagues. He's had some good years. He's had some down years. He's not coming off the best of his career. And it feels like, and again, I've used this word a lot, and I'll use it again, anecdotally speaking, it seemed like the Braves were one club that really had his number over the years. I mean, opening day 2018 was the exact opposite of what opening day 2025 was, because he was busy losing a game to the Braves. Meanwhile, the game that took place on Thursday, he was a big reason why they lost. He couldn't retire any of the batters he faced, and the Padres went from down one to up by three, scoring four runs in what felt like just death by a thousand paper cuts in a lot of ways. The game-tying home run notwithstanding, the rest of that inning was just slowly watching all the air being taken out of the balloon on opening day for the Braves, who, you know, they were busy hitting a couple of home runs early. The Padres, I mentioned that defense. I think Ozzie Albies got robbed of a three-run homer in that game. Drake Baldwin hit one to dead center field that thought his first major league hit was going to leave the ballpark. Instead, dragged in by that guy, Jackson Merrill. And man, you want to talk about a player that's making an impression here. I mean, he did last year. He could have been rookie of the year last year. I mean, Paul Skeens is Paul Skeens, but Jackson Merrill, just about any other year, I think is a unanimous rookie of the year in either league. Pick one. Doesn't matter. But this is a kid that I've watched him a lot over the past few days, and obviously I watched him a lot last season, but everything he does just seems like there's a purpose to it, and I've said this, and I posted on social. It just feels a lot like Freddie Freeman. You watch that stance, watch that setup, watch the opposite field approach and the hits that he's been getting in the series. It's no surprise why the Padres love this kid so much, and he's been right in the middle of everything with some big hits for them in this series. Now, look, the Joe Jimenez loss we've known about since November. So not adding somebody who was a true replacement for him, I think, stings a bit. A.J. Minter, in the last six, 7 years, has been, to me, in a lot of ways, in most years, the glue of this bullpen, and nothing was really done to replace him either. And I don't want to sell Craig Kimbrell completely short here, because he could very well be a factor. But Jesse Chavez, a good story seemingly every year, but that's not a major move, and we'll see with these guys if they're able to help out. I mean, we'll see, eventually, I guess, Raisel Iglesias will have an opportunity to get into a game in a save situation. We saw Pierce Johnson. We saw Dylan Lee, who, unfortunately, great in the first game, hung around for an extra batter in the second game, gave up a home run. These things happen, though. If your bullpen can give up one run over three or four innings, you know, most nights they're doing their job. But your offense has to do its job to give them any kind of a margin for error, which right now, let's be frank, there's just not for the Braves pitching staff. And this is what makes it feel a lot like just an extension of 2024, where the Braves had, I would argue, at least the best pitching staff on paper, more than that, in the National League. And we're right up there with the Seattle Mariners for the best overall staff in baseball. So you're getting the pitching, and I think you're going to get the pitching this year. And I know that might sound weird with no Max Fried and to a lesser extent no Charlie Morton, but Chris Sale, Ronaldo Lopez, Spencer Schwellenbach, eventually get Strider back. I think A.J. Smith-Shawver is going to be really intriguing to watch this year. Now that he's a little bit older, had a chance to develop some other pitches, what's he going to become? You got Grant Holmes, who I think is another great story. You heard from him on the last edition of From the Diamond. But we're not just looking for great stories. We're looking for production, right? And who's going to be able to do that? And I do think that the Braves have a chance to have a strong rotation, and I think they have a chance to have at least a solid bullpen. But losing on opening day in the fashion that they did doesn't go a long way towards making you feel confident about it, especially in an offseason where you knew you had some holes and you weren't necessarily able to fill them. So that's a little bit of how I view that. And obviously I'm kind of in the camp of, I've been around baseball for a long time. I've covered it for 21 years now, and I've been a fan of baseball even longer than that. And I understand that the long season is going to take it out of you. It's going to bring you to the highest of highs at times where you feel like, hey, we're never going to lose another game. And then you're going to be in the places where you are right now where you're like, man, I wonder if we're ever going to win a game. And that's kind of where the Braves find themselves. And they got to figure all that out. But I do think that the bones are there for the Braves to have a good starting rotation and a decent bullpen. You got Raisel Iglesias, Pierce Johnson, Dylan Lee. Those are the strong arms. I think Daisbell Hernandez could be one of those. Aaron Bummer is a solid veteran. And then we'll see with Inyo De Los Santos, who we got to see his first action in a Braves uniform on Saturday. He looked pretty good. And Jose Suarez and Hector Neris, those kind of feel like the weak links. So if you're asking me, where does Craig Kimbrell fit in eventually, I think one of those two spots is probably the very likely outcome for that. The roles, though, they need to be defined for some of these guys, because you can't just throw your three or four best relievers for 162 games. You can get away with that stuff in the playoffs, especially like, think about the way the Braves did it in 2021. The reason why you can throw the Tyler Matzicks and the Will Smiths and the A.J. Minters and everybody that was in the night shift basically over and over and over again was, well, you played two games, had a day off. Then you played three games, had a day off. You had these travel days. They had a couple of days between series. So if it felt like they threw a lot, well, they did. But over the course of the regular season, you're playing for 10 straight days, then you get a day off. You know, you're playing for longer than that sometimes, and you finally get a day off, a week straight. So you can't manage the bullpen that same way. And I'm not just saying that because, hey, you know, Brian Snitker needs somebody to explain why he chose this guy or that guy. I mean, that criticism comes with that job, no matter what you do. I mean, you can pull all the right levers, and everybody thinks, oh, well, that's what he should have done because it worked. When it doesn't work, you're going to hear, well, why didn't he do this, this, and this? And look, that's completely fair. That's how this works. That's how sports works. That's how sports talk radio works. That's how just about anything in life works. When everything's great, you just kind of accept it as the way it should be. When it's not, you want to rebel against it because you don't understand why it has to be this way. And it doesn't have to be this way for 162 games, but it doesn't feel like that right now. So we'll see what plays out with this bullpen with some time to go. And obviously, at some point this year, the Braves could make some other additions beyond just Craig Kimbrell, though I think that one has the potential to make some impact in some leverage situations. And I think that you'll see him in the next, what, 3-4 weeks have that opportunity, if all goes well in Gwinnett, where he had to start the season, for him to jump in and do some things. The starters, though, I think have been fine. The starting rotation, we talked a little bit about that. Outside of Hector Neris, the bullpen has been fine. The offense, though, has not. Marcell Ozuna had a 2-run single on Friday, and that is the Braves' only hit with a runner in scoring position over the first three games. I would read that again, but I really don't want to, but I'm going to give you the stats because this is a baseball show. 1-for-22 with runners in scoring position, ain't going to play. Leaving 23 guys on base, ain't going to play. And that doesn't even factor in plays like we saw on Saturday where Matt Olson hit a ball to right field that would have been a home run in 24 out of 30 parks. Petco Park ain't one of those parks. Fernando Tatis was able to deflect it and make sure it didn't go over the wall. And in a one-run game, those things you look at and you think, man, nothing goes right. And then you got the Padres hitting a line drive off the pitcher that they get a double out of, and they scored the only run of the game. It was just one of those days. And when it's one of those days on top of one of those days, on top of really one of those days to start things out, you can see how this compounding thing works, and it's not a whole lot of fun. Now, Austin Riley, Matt Olson, Ozzie Albies, Michael Harris, I mean, these guys are going to produce some runs. I think we know that. Jerkson Profar is going to be a factor in this lineup as well. Acuna will be back. Sean Murphy is ramping up down in Florida. He should be back at some point, though. I think folks are kind of enamored right now with Drake Baldwin. He may not have a ton of hits, but man, that kid puts on a professional at bat. And that kind of thing, along with Jerkson Profar, let me point that out. It felt like last year, you had some innings where, did the Braves even see four or five pitches in that inning? Or were they just ground ball, ground ball, ground ball, ground ball, pop-up, ground ball? It just felt like they were over-aggressive at times. Then you bring in a couple of grinders who really, really work at bats. And I felt like. I mean, I'd have to look at it again, but at least in the moment, it seemed like Drake Baldwin kind of got jobbed as the last out on Saturday. But again, you can also argue you got to swing if it's close. You're down to your last out. You got to be in protect mode. But I'm not going to criticize a young player that has the skills, I think, at the plate and the approach that he does. It's been impressive. But Murphy could return, and that could crank up over the next couple of 3 weeks. He's down in extended spring training catching games and could begin a rehab assignment by next weekend from that cracked rib that he suffered in spring training. And I know a lot of people are down on Sean Murphy based on what he did a year ago, but I'm here to tell you, if the Braves are to have the kind of success that they want to have in 2025 and the kind that you expect them to have, Sean Murphy needs to play a part. You know, and I don't think anybody's actively rooting for him to self-destruct and, you know, never get his career back on track, but I understand the frustration of not a good second half in 2023 and obviously a lost year of 2024. It was the worst of his career. But you've got to get him back on track. And Drake Baldwin could play some kind of role for this club over the course of the season. We'll see. But obviously, he was here ahead of schedule. No two ways about that. But I do love what I'm seeing from Drake Baldwin. He has been terrific over the first three games. I know the Padres stole a bunch of bases on him in the first one, but then we saw the arm on Friday and Saturday. When you have a Chris Sale, for example, giving him the kind of praise that he gave him as a game caller, as a receiver, and as somebody that's clearly the opportunity is not too big for him, that goes a long way in my book as well. Be that as it may, we got a lot more Braves to talk about and to help me out coming up here on From the Diamond. I'm going to welcome CJ Nikowski of FanDuel Sports Network. I'm still getting used to that one. I'll ask CJ a little bit about this opening series against the San Diego Padres, the road trip ahead that continues with the Dodgers, and a host of other Braves questions that I'm sure you, me, and everybody would love to hear about. And CJ will be here to help me out with that. It comes your way next on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Now, more From the Diamond with Grant McCauley, brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer from Mark Spain Real Estate, 855-299-SOLD, on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back into From the Diamond with Grant McCauley here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game as we continue from the Kia Studios and keep this Braves conversation going in what has been, no doubt, a frustrating start to the Braves season and only about halfway through what is going to be a challenging road trip, to say the least. San Diego has not been kind to the Braves. Los Angeles awaits the Braves. But before we get to all of that, I want to break down what we've seen here early. And to help me do that, I want to welcome in one of the voices of the Braves, CJ Nikowski of FanDuel Sports, who is out in San Diego as the Braves got their season started over the weekend. Well, CJ, as always, I appreciate you making some time for me. We've got to talk about this opening road trip, a big test for this club right out of the gate. First, they square off with a team that ended their 2024 season, and then they get a showdown with the Dodgers. And not only that, 7 games in 7 days to start the season, and that's kind of unusual. And I think just overall, this has to be one of the tougher opening assignments for any club to start a season, doesn't it?
I think so, but the exact same thing happened back in 1994 that the Braves started 7 games against the Padres and the Dodgers and went 7-0 on that trip. Not going to happen this year now. Unfortunately, but it is definitely a tough one. I will say this, listening to what most of the guys have been saying, they like it. They actually like the idea of coming out here early, knocking out the West Coast trip. Yeah, sure, you can't avoid good teams anyway, and this is certainly a really tough trip and a tough way to start. But at the same time, the schedule finishes really strong in their favor when it comes to travel and time zones, and it's a trade-off, right? And so I think, again, not that they would necessarily pick it this way, but I don't think guys are too upset about it. They understand that if you want to get where this team wants to go, you got to play the best. In this case, you got to play the best right from jump, and there's no off days in there, which we'll see how the whole 7 days play out, but it could be a little bit of a challenge for the bullpen. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be challenging for the pitching staff, for the lineup, just for a team, I think, getting its legs under it. A lot to unpack, I guess, no pun intended, when you start on a road trip. But I don't want to get lost in one game, because you and I both know, and most people listening, I think, out there know how much goes into the marathon of a Major League Baseball season. The opening day defeat, though, the way it happened, I think was one of the more frustrating outcomes that you'll find. The bullpen, as you mentioned, I mean, it's going to get tested this year. The same couple of guys can't throw every single game. We know that as well. But what is your read on how this group will or can come together? And, you know, where's your confidence level, I guess, to start the season?
you have to give it some runway, right? We as fans want to win every single game. Of course, that's not going to happen. We want the bullpen to be perfect. That's not going to happen. So when you see it early like we did on opening day, and there are frustrating losses, I guess the only thing I'd say it's a little different there, not to get too worked up about, is that it was a one-run lead, right? There are times where there are way more frustrating losses in games that you feel like you have in hand. Mm-hmm. There was some good back and forth there. The Padres are an underrated good team. They didn't add a lot, but they're still a good team. They have a really good lineup. And thinking about Hector Neris not having a great day in that opener, he hadn't been here very long, right? Been here a couple of weeks through two games in spring training, maybe still getting settled in a little bit. And so you have to give it some space. You have to give it some time. You make a decision with your bullpen, and you're not going to necessarily overreact, I don't think, and start worrying about, a couple of games into the season. So you have to let it be evaluated, let it play out a little bit. Is there an opportunity where they could be a little bit deeper? Sure. I mean, AJ is a big loss. Joe Jimenez is a huge loss. That is the one that you're trying to make up for in the process. Bullpens are fluid. There will be changes. Changes happen. It's a couple of nice arms, veteran arms that are willing to go to the minor leagues right now, which you certainly do appreciate. So I am not over panicking here early on. Certainly Alex Anthopoulos is not either.
And obviously those reinforcements are nice. You mentioned there are a couple of them down in the minor leagues with Craig Kimbrell being the biggest name. Jesse Chavez also back with the club, and hey, who saw that coming? Well, probably everybody, but I'm kind of wondering, CJ, are you surprised that the Braves didn't get that proven bullpen piece or two earlier in the winter, especially with knowing that Joe Jimenez could potentially be out for the year? That news broke back in early November, and then AJ Minter moved on to the Mets as a free agent, so even when I talked to Alex Anthopoulos in spring training, he said they pursued these other options. The deals just didn't work out, and I guess you can't help that sometimes, and you try to control the controllables, for lack of a better phrase, but by adding a few pieces to the mix, I guess, right now in the minors that could help you out, at least you've got those options down in the farm. But all in all, it kind of felt like a bit of a miss for the Braves over the winter.
You do, and it got expensive this winter. Quite honestly, that Tanner Scott contract went to a place that I don't think anyone was really anticipating. He beat expectations by a pretty wide margin, right? So that was a big one. And looking at a guy like Kirby Yates, who'd been here before, and whether or not that was even an option around the table, he did really well for himself in free agency. The guy that's still out there that is shocking to me is David Robertson. And there's some rumblings about maybe what he is looking for from a financial standpoint. Remember, he represents himself now. He is his own agent. Yeah. And sounds like, at least up to this point, that it's all about what he really wants, right? He turned down a $7 million mutual option with the Rangers, which I think was reasonable. He had 99 punchouts last year. He could definitely do better than that. In the open market, the question is how much? And you hear some numbers that start to get maybe into the mid-teens on a one-year deal, might be pushing it a little bit, maybe makes you a little bit uncomfortable. I thought he would have been a great fit, but it doesn't mean you overpay for him either. And I think that's ultimately what ended up happening here with the relief market, is that there was a handful of small number of guys at the very top, and it got really expensive. And I think the Braves, everything that we're hearing, trying to give themselves some flexibility to have and not lock themselves up to a payroll spot where they can't then make moves later in the year.
And that Robertson thing is a really good point, not just that he represents himself, but it kind of reminds me at least a little bit of the 2019 season. And this had compensatory draft picks attached to it. But when Craig Kimbrell was just sitting out there waiting for a better option, for a better offer, and eventually he got one from the Cubs. But it cost him several months of the season, obviously, and the Braves signed Dallas Keuchel around that time as well. But, long story short, you do what you can during the winter, and then as you pointed out, you make adjustments during the season. And one thing that Alex Anthopoulos discussed really early in his tenure with the Braves is you don't want to start forcing deals. You don't want to start making overpayments that could kind of paint you into a corner if they don't work out and when you need help during the season. And that part, the needing help during the season, that's certainly more of a win than an if, it seems like.
Yep, I agree. And I think the area in which they did address things early, as he also talked about at the beginning of the season, was making sure they had outfield depth. Mm-hmm. Right? This organization been around and covering for a long time, always looking for outfielders, it seems like, whether it's because guys have gotten hurt. Obviously, we saw it a couple of years ago in winning a World Series and the major changes that they made in the outfield. It feels like this year in particular, the depth that is there, especially once Ronald gets back and now that Verdugo is in this organization as well, plus the guys that you currently have on the big league roster, like that is an area of depth that they said, we got to get in front of this. It feels like now. So we're not dealing with this like we often are and have been these last few years later in the season. But I do think that, again, the bullpen situation is a little bit different. It'll be fluid. There'll be teams that start to drop out, and then we'll see whether or not a move can be made.
Chatting with CJ Nikowski of FanDuel Sports. He joins me here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. One last thought on the bullpen and the departures. I think we're going to see I believe, how much they're going to miss A.J. Minter. I know he missed some time last year, and of course, Father Time is undefeated. We'll see how he pitches in 2025 and beyond, but A.J. seemed to be one of the most important parts of this group during his tenure, year in and year out. That's a loss, C.J., I think, that you feel on the field and off the field, isn't it?
Yeah, he's such a great guy. Fortunate to get to know him a little bit last year. It was just pleasant to be around and exactly the kind of teammate and bullpen mate that everybody wants to have. But with a loss creates opportunity, mm-hmm. right? And so that opportunity for Dylan Lee, where he was last year and kind of emerging with that great slider that he has and even seeing some uptick in velocity, there's a great opportunity. He was really good on opening day. He's going to be asked to take on a bigger role. Aaron Bummer, I felt like, was somewhat underrated last year. I thought he did a good job. He's got a good left arm. There's a reason why he's been around for a long time. So there's great opportunity for those two, I think, in particular, to emerge. I'm with you. Absolutely. You miss AJ. He's a special player, a special person. Did well for himself in a contract. You got to be happy for him. Wish it was in a different division, but so be it. But this is the life of the bullpen. And so that opportunity is there. And there's a lot of confidence for me in Dylan Lee and Aaron Bummer. So you got a couple of lefties there in particular that I think can do a good job and hold it down.
Yeah, nice to have a couple of options there, no doubt. Now, let's talk about something we hope to see more of this year, and that's the offense as a collective. If 2023 was that high water mark and 2024 was hopefully the low bar, then I think they're going to clear it pretty easily this year. Jerickson Profar comes over. He's got the leadoff role until Ronald Acuña Jr. is back. But how do you feel about the potential of a full-strength Braves squad this year with Tim Hyers also on board now and able to make maybe some necessary course corrections for getting the Braves as far away from that 2024 season and as far away from that 2024 mindset, perhaps, as possible?
Yeah, I'm excited for him. I've known Tim for a long time. So as far as, you know, that opportunity goes and what you're going to get on the coaching side, I think everyone's going to be really pleased. Even talking to Chipper a little bit during spring training and talking to other coaches and players as well, I think they're all settling in really nicely with him. And so I think the opportunity to see that bump up that we're all looking for offensively ultimately is going to be there. But having Jerickson Profar here, I don't think it can be understated at this point. We saw it in spring. He has fit in so nicely here from a personality standpoint with this group. He's wanted to be here in the worst way. I just think there's a lot of optimism surrounding what can be this offensive season. You know, last year, a lot of it was injuries, right? And kind of is what it is. And it was brutal to have to go through it. I don't think we're looking at major changes that have to happen as far as, you know, swings and other things. And we talk a lot about pitch selection. That's what Hyers has kind of preached and how you get there and the mindset of having a little bit more discipline. But there's a lot of reason to be excited about what's going on with the bats.
No doubt. And I think we're all wondering, we're all excited about Ronald Acuña Jr. getting back. The ETA sounds like sometime in May, though it's not completely clear yet. He's been through this ACL thing before, CJ, and it seems like this time around, at least to me, he's been able to work hard but also benefit from his experience to do the best things for his body throughout the rehab process. That and the team obviously took a very measured approach with him as well. They've tried to manage expectations as much as you can for a player of Ronald Acuña Jr.'s magnitude coming back by, I think, not necessarily throwing a whole bunch of dates throughout his rehab.
Yeah, I think that's probably the smart way to do it. Slow play it. They've been through it before. They know what it's like not having him. We've seen it, unfortunately, too often. And not to say too often, it's not his fault, right? It's just what's going on with the knees with him. And so I'm on board with that 100%. As much as we're all anxious, just like we are with Strider, you know who he is, you know what they can bring to the table. But I think the Braves, and part of the reason, again, going back to that outfield depth that they have done this, is because they want to be cautious. They want to have guys not just now, but they want to have them till the very end and have a long, deep October run. And so play it safe, play it smart, and we all look forward to seeing him back at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, we all know what kind of impact he could make on this team as well. Let's talk a little bit about the rotation before we get out of here. There's a Cy Young winner at the top in Chris Sale, multiple All-Stars at that when Spencer Strider gets back alongside Reynaldo Lopez. Then you got the young standout Spencer Schwellenbach, who impressed everyone last year. I don't know that he's going to sneak up on anybody this season. We're a long way from October, but that's the obvious expectation for this club, and pitching will play a big part of that. But putting that aside, I think if you're to do a census of all 30 teams' top four starters, that group of Sale and Strider and Lopez and Schwellenbach, that's as good as anybody's running out there.
Absolutely. And that's the kind of depth that you love to have. And so now it's a matter of making sure, like you said, October's a long way away. You got to get there first. But by keeping that group healthy and ready to go, for these moments that hopefully are coming for this club. But it is special. It's fun to watch. Chris Sale was good on opening day. He has been such a blessing for this organization. And I know, again, as fans, we're always looking for the next thing. I do think, and I mentioned it on the opening day broadcast, that you almost got to take a, don't forget to take a minute once in a while and appreciate that deal. And that deal that they got done and what he meant to this organization last year and what he will mean going forward. That is incredible where he was the few previous seasons with the Red Sox. He finished strong, but Alex Anthopoulos was able to pull that off for Vaughn Grissom. And then to be able to get him extended and worked out, is it's just been unbelievable. So you have him, and not only has he just been great, but he's been great for the rest of this group, which has been really fun to listen to him talk about it. He's so incredibly humble, and he's trying to lift the other guys up, and it's been really cool to see. And what he's meant to Schwellenbach, I think, in particular, we asked him about that on the broadcast a couple of games ago, or a while, I guess, now back in spring training, and you love it. You know, you can tell that Spencer loves it, that he's a sponge. He asks a lot of questions, and he can sit there and lean on Chris Sale. This depth is great. Grant Holmes is really good. I think the fact that once Spencer Strider gets back and we're talking about Grant Holmes and hopefully AJ Smith-Shaw are pitching well, and you know, what are you going to do there, would be nice. That cutter for AJ could end up being a big difference maker for him that we saw in spring training. So you're right. I mean, it is deep. It is legit. And if you can go into an October with that four, especially based on how things have been the last few years with starting pitching that you haven't had available to you in the postseason, that would be an unbelievable gift.
Let me just ask you about Smith-Shawver. He has impressed the Braves enough to kind of pushed his way to the big leagues at 20 years old a couple of years ago. He's had some time to round out that arsenal. What's your read on his development, and what do you think is a reasonable expectation for him? Because we've all seen the stuff. We all know it's there, but will he be able to put it all together at the big league level?
I think he will be. He is athletic enough that he'll be able to repeat his delivery, and I think in due time, getting more innings under his belt, and obviously now he's going to do it at the big league level, will yield some really good results. Is he going to have a huge year this year? Who knows? Is it going to take a couple more years because he's so young? We'll see. But can he get there? I think the answer is yes. And again, going back to the addition of the cutter for a guy who has such a great changeup, it's nice when a guy is that young and already has a good changeup. Now it becomes about how can you make that pitch work best against big league hitters, and not just the pitch by itself, but how you sequence to get there. And I do think that cutter is really going to help him, especially against those lefties. You get him a little bit more honest inside, which opens up more opportunity for that changeup where it doesn't have to be perfect away. So I think that is something that we see with him. So that cutter looked pretty good. I think like any other pitcher, command inside the strike zone will be really important, even though he has a plus arm and he has an exciting arm. We know where the game is now velocity-wise. And so I think that those are the things that I keep an eye on. How's the command inside the strike zone? How are things for him with the cutter and other pitches kind of feeding off of it? But there's a lot to be excited about.
He's CJ Nitkowski of FanDuel Sports Network. Make sure you are following along with him on socials. You can find him at CJ Nitkowski on most of those. And, of course, you can hear him all season long with Brandon Gaudin on the FanDuel Sports Network. Look forward to catching up with you once you guys get back to the ballpark. Safe travels, and hopefully bring home a few wins.
Sounds good. Thanks, Grant.
Well, that's going to wrap up hour number one of From the Diamond, but don't go anywhere. We've got a lot more to get to, including some of the biggest headlines from across Major League Baseball and a visit with Scott Braun of Foul Territory TV. It's all ahead for you on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.